Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to Ask the Vet on KDNK. This is Mary Fox. I'm engineering my own show today, so should be a little scary. Anyway, welcome, everyone. And today we have Dr. Louise Marin with us. And Louise is going to talk to us about, you know, this season is changing. Winter's coming. Things are going to change for our pets and for our horses as well. So she's going to talk a little bit about that. We may talk about some other preventative health issues as well. So welcome, Dr. Marin.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So winter is coming. Some of us are really looking forward to it because of skiing and whatnot, but it is going to be, it'll be sad to lose this beautiful weather that we're having right now. But tell us a little bit about, let's start with dogs. Tell us a little bit about what we should be looking out for when we're getting ready for winter with our dogs.
So fortunately around here, since most dogs are indoor pets, we don't have a whole lot that we need to do to prepare them for winter. If you do have outdoor dogs, then you're probably already equipped with their kennels to give them an insulated place to sleep. But certainly there are certain breeds and certain individuals that have a harder time coping with the cold air temps. Some of our smaller dogs who don't have as much body fat and shorter hair, you want to have, believe it or not, clothing will make their life a little bit more tolerable, and you can take them more places in the wintertime. You know, there's some other things as far as the winter is concerned that present management issues for our pets. One of the things is the different types of salt products that are used to melt ice on sidewalks and driveways and roadways. And not all of them, but some of them can actually cause problems in pets if they get on their skin and also if they're eaten. So some dogs really like to eat snow. And if they eat snow that has, you know, is alongside a roadway that's been plowed and some of that melting salt has gotten in there, I have seen some dogs actually get a toxicity from that, which manifests as a neurological condition. And generally it does pass with time as the substance gets metabolized out of their body. But it's good for people to be aware of that. If you have a dog that likes to eat snow, just protect them from eating it near roadways that have been treated with ice melt. Go ahead.
Well, what about it being on their paws? I mean, and then they go inside and they're licking it. And is that a way that they can receive some of that toxicity?
Yeah, they can. It's going to be hard for them to ingest enough that way to actually get a neurologic toxicity. But they definitely can get kind of irritation and burning of the skin itself from that contact. So, you know, as far as clothing is concerned, some people do have booties for their dogs. And in part, that could be to protect them from ice melt. But more often, it's to protect them from getting snowballs in the fur between their toes, because that can be really a bummer and slow them down on hikes through the snow.
What about washing their feet? You know, like in the spring when it's really, really muddy and yucky. I know I always am drying off my dog's feet before he come into the house, so is washing the feet off a good idea as well?
Yeah, definitely if you're out walking on community sidewalks and roads where people have been using ice melt, rinsing them off is a great idea. Just, you know, being kind of logical about using room temperature water. Too hot of water can be, you know, is almost more uncomfortable than using slightly cool water on cold toes. So
this is a reminder to everyone out there. You are listening to KDNK and this is Ask the Vet. This is a call-in show. So please give us a call if you have any questions about your pets. Doesn't have to be about winter or winterizing your pets. The number here is 963-2976 and it is 3 or 4 34. What about antifreeze?
That's a really good question. So antifreeze is one of the most lethal common substances that we have in our lives for our pets. Very, very, very important to prevent them from eating. Even a teaspoon can be lethal to a dog of any size. So basically supervision is kind of the key to avoiding that. And if you do see your dog licking or drinking a puddle of any sort of substance, then you want to take precautions, because the sooner you act, the more chance you have of a good outcome. The longer that toxin is in the body, the less anybody can do about it once you figure it out. And for some reason, there is a sweetener in antifreeze, so pets are drawn to it, cats and dogs.
What kinds of things do you do to treat that? I mean, what's the antidote, if you will?
You actually give them a different kind of alcohol. So the component in antifreeze that's toxic is a type of alcohol. And so you have to give them a different kind that hopefully will kick the bad kind off of the receptors that it's harming. And then what it does is it causes kidney failure, massive kidney failure. So you put them on supportive IV fluid therapy to try to help flush all that out of their body without harming the kidneys.
Let's talk some more about the kinds of things that we all get used to in the summertime when the weather is good. We're still talking about dogs here. And, you know, you're in and out of the house. You're taking the dog in and out of the house. Is there anything? I mean, I've never had a dog that's worn a coat, but I know a lot of people who do have coats on their dogs. And I think you mentioned the small ones with short hair and stuff, that sometimes that's clothing is important. But talk to me a little bit about how you know and when you should be doing something to keep your animal warmer, because you don't want to overheat them, do you?
Right. So, you know, I think there's a fine line. And certainly we put human characteristics on our pets that aren't always necessarily warranted. So, you know, sometimes dogs maybe wear clothing that they don't need. But you look at the animal specifically.
Cute.
Yeah, they look so good. That's why people do it.
And
it's kind of fun. Dress
and the
them
booties
up like
in
a
the
doll.
Coat.
But, you know, you look at the animal. So if you have a young, healthy dog, they've got normal body condition, meaning they're not too thin, not too fat, and they're active, they're out, they're going to be generating enough body heat. Even most of the short-haired breeds, if they're outdoors and being active, they're going to generate enough heat, particularly on a warm, sunny day. Versus, you know, if you have an older dog that's very thin, older dogs in general, or a dog with a systemic illness, like diabetes or hypothyroidism or something that's going to interfere with their body's internal thermostat mechanism, they don't have the resources that they need to heat their own core. So in those cases, like if you have an old, thin dog that just can't move around very well, that would be a good candidate for some supportive warmth clothing, or, you know, a hypothyroid dog. Most of those dogs tend to be fat, so they have a fair bit of insulation, but still their thermostat is somewhat wonky. So, you know, very young dogs, it's a little bit of just common sense. You know, if you're outside and your dog is shivering, then maybe you want to have a coat on hand. Or, you know, we get in the car and we are up front by the vents and we start blasting the heat. But if they're in the back, you know, away from the vents and they're just sitting there, they can't be active to generate their own body heat. That might be a situation too, where you might want to give them a blanket or a coat or something.
Right. All good advice. Good advice. How about cats? Cats are often indoor. Do they even know it's a different time of year?
Yeah, cats, I don't have a lot of input as far as winterizing them, because the ones that get to go outdoors usually are going to self-regulate and ask to come back inside when they get too cold. And the majority of cats are indoors only, so.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about horses a little bit. Well, before we start, though, let me remind you, you are listening to KDNK. This is Ask the Vet. It's 4:40. It is a call-in show, so you can call in and ask Dr. Marin any questions you might have about your horse or your pets. 963-2976. Horses, Dr. Marin.
You know, horses are going to be similar as far as their tolerance for the cold. Certainly acclimation is important. If a horse has come from the Southwest and they haven't had to handle a winter in the Colorado Rocky Mountains, then they might need some supplemental warmth, always giving them a place where they can get out of the wind, where they can get out of the elements is important component of husbandry. And then again, when you have an older animal who doesn't have the body condition, you know, they don't have the muscle and the fat to insulate them, they're going to be the ones that are probably going to need clothing. You probably see, you know, certain places where horses are housed and they're somewhat pampered. You know, they may all be wearing blankets. And in a way, blanket can actually hinder a horse's ability, its natural mechanisms to keep itself warm. So if you put the blanket on the horse, you need to understand that their hair coat's not going to grow as thick, and the hair coat actually gets kind of matted down by the weight of the blanket. So when you take that blanket off, then they don't, all their natural mechanisms are impaired. So, you know, we tend to recommend people only put blankets on horses that either have their hair clipped so that they can stay nice and sleek for showing through the winter season, or if they're older and don't have the internal resources to maintain their own body temperature.
Well, that's really interesting. So, in other words, you may hinder their natural ability to stay warm by putting a blanket on them and by stunting the growth of their hair, et cetera, like you said. And how about sweating? And I mean, is there problems with the blanket getting wet and sitting on them for too long?
Yep, exactly. All of those things come into play. That's why if your horse has the ability to keep itself warm, it's kind of better to just let nature take its course, make sure they have some place to get out of the wind and the snow, or the, you know, precipitation, I should say. And because if your blanket, most of them are going to be waterproof, but if it's not, then the water gets in there, then you create a situation where they're going to get chilled. And also they can get skin diseases like mold infections, fungal infections.
Oh, so I was
when they have something that's holding moisture against the skin.
So would you recommend if you have a horse that is outside and does need that blanket, that you regularly are grooming the horse and taking the blanket off and changing it maybe? Or how?
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing that can happen, you know, if a horse is just wearing a blanket all the time, is they can have changes with their body that you will go unnoticed until they've gotten to advanced stages. We see that sometimes in these older horses, you know, they've got a blanket on because they need the blanket. But if it's not getting removed on a regular basis and to groom the horse and assess what they look like underneath the blanket, they can lose weight and you wouldn't know about it.
Mm-hmm. How about medically? Are there medical things that we need to take into consideration in the winter with horses, particular vaccinations or particular, I don't know, preventative things that need to occur?
Well, we do give a certain vaccine in the fall, which is for the rhinotracheitis virus, and that is a type of virus that is spread between horses, and it causes a respiratory disease. It can also cause a neurologic form. There are different variants. It's not very straightforward, but basically there is a vaccine that we administer in the fall to help protect horses against that virus in the wintertime. And we do tend to deworm horses in the fall after the first hard freeze to eliminate parasites from their digestive tract. And then dental care.
Because those parasites don't tend to live outside in the wintertime?
Right. Well, they get covered up. So there are some parasite eggs that will survive a winter freeze. But when horses aren't eating grass off the ground, they're going to have a lot less exposure to those, and they'll get covered up with snow. So you can essentially clear the system for a period of time while the ground is covered in snow by deworming them in the fall. And then dental care a lot of times is something that we encourage people to do in the fall or the early winter, because horses are going to need more than ever to have their mouths be functional to be able to process the nutrients that they need to maintain their body heat. So that's a good time of year to get that done.
Well, as long as you're mentioning vaccines and dental care, let's talk a little bit about preventative health and how we keep our animals healthy all year round. You in particular, you have a you do a lot of work in dentistry, I understand. And so tell us a little more about the importance of that, especially dentistry in preventative health. Why is that? Why do we have to pay so much attention to our horses' mouths and their teeth, their oral health, and our dogs and cats as well?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I think it's something that gets quite a bit of attention more in recent days. It's something that has gotten minimal to zero attention in days past. And we've come to realize as a profession how critical dental health is to overall quality of life. So, you know, in human medicine, it was a little bit the same way. Dentistry has gone through a whole process of evolution. And, you know, today's recommendation for good preventive dental health care is to see your dentist twice a year. And it may just be a matter of them looking and, you know, maybe a cleaning. But the majority of the time, the goal is to try to get people to come in to stay healthy. Because once you wait until there's a problem, then all of a sudden the cost goes up. The morbidity, meaning the pain and suffering and, medications that need to be taken and all the potential for adverse reactions that come with medications, and the whole picture just gets a lot more complex. So veterinary medicine is trending in that same direction in that, like you said, we consider it wellness care. And if we don't do anything to the teeth until there's a problem, then that's reactive instead of proactive. So, my recommendation, and I think it comes as a surprise to a lot of people because people have owned dogs for years and years and maybe never had their teeth cared for, and they didn't notice a problem. And I think that's because dogs and cats have a hard time manifesting in a noticeable way when they have pain in their mouth. Getting them in on a regular basis once a year allows us to do a very quick cleaning, do a thorough exam, and hopefully just send them home. If we find some minor problem, we know that it couldn't have been there for longer than a year, hopefully less than that. And it keeps things simple. Whereas if we wait until there's one problem that you can see obvious on an exam, chances are there's a lot going on in there, and then the whole picture gets complex like we talked about with people. So.
And there's potentially a lot of other health issues too if something like that goes on for a long time untreated. Is that correct?
Right. So it has been proven that there is a link between systemic health, so the health of the entire body, and the health in the mouth, because the mouth has such a rigorous blood supply and all the structures are so intimately situated in bone, which is a hard tissue, and yet it is also very susceptible to injury and damage as a result of infection. So the bacteria in the mouth can get easily access to the bloodstream, and then they get carried to distant organs like the liver and the kidneys and the heart, and they cause little micro damage that isn't noticeable. It's a cumulative problem. So years down the road, now you've got a 12-year-old dog and they're in kidney failure and nobody really knows why. These are kind of some of the things that we're looking at as to what might be contributing to that scenario.
Wow. Good information. Reminder, it is now 4:48 and you're listening to Katie Ask the Vet on KD&K, and it is a call-in show, so please give us a call, 963-2976. I did receive a question. It's taking us back a little bit to the winter, but are there issues with ice in a horse's hooves, like with dogs' paws?
Yes, they can get issues with that, where they get ice balls packed underneath their foot, so the surface of their foot is no longer flat. It's like it has half a snowball underneath it, and it creates kind of a rocker where that puts some stress on the joints and the tendons and ligaments that are meant to keep the leg stable. So you want to, again, it kind of comes down to basic husbandry, where you want to get your eyes on the horse at least once a day, you know, preferably twice, because they need to be fed twice a day. Notice if they have big ice balls in their feet that they get scraped out. They do make a special pad. It's called the popper pad, that can be put underneath the horseshoe, so between the shoe and the foot, and it has a black rubber bubble on it, for lack of a better term, that when they walk, it kind of has motion in it, and it'll pop the snow out.
Oh, interesting.
One other thing I didn't mention before in regards to dogs and their health during the winter is in regards to parasites, external parasites, which in horses, the parasite load tends to go down because the eggs are on the ground, frozen underneath the snow layer. And so horses are getting less exposure. In dogs, one of the things that we see with parasites that actually increases in the wintertime is lice infestation. We see it most commonly in dogs that are exposed to other unfamiliar dogs, like in daycare and things like that, daycare grooming facilities, but they can get heavy infestations of lice, and we mainly only see that during the cold months.
So Why is that?
It just has to do with the physiology of the lice itself. And so lice as a parasite are very species specific. So you are not going to get lice from your dog if it has lice, because those lice only want to be on dogs. And same goes for cats and rabbits and people. Your dog isn't going to get lice from your kid if he comes home from school with it.
Or from the family cat.
Right, right. So they don't transmit between family members unless they are the same species. So if you see your dog getting itchy in the winter all of a sudden, that's kind of always at the top of our list when you bring them in to see us. And the nice thing about lice is that they're not microscopic. You can actually see them with the naked eye.
So if you see your, there could be lots of reasons that your dog is itching, correct? So, but if you see that, you should be first looking to see if there's some lice.
Right, right.
Okay. So that makes me think of other dermatological issues. You know, it seems like there's a lot of luck going on these days, not just with animals, but with humans. Well, we're animals too, in terms of allergies. So I've heard that a lot of the allergies that animals suffer from, I mean, it can be from food, but it also can be from the environment. And is there any change? Like, do they get some relief in the winter, or does it get worse in the winter, or does it depend?
Yeah, I'd say it depends. You would think that it would get better because there's less pollens and, plant matter in the air. And that is true. So if you have an animal that has allergies to grasses, weeds, seeds, pollens, trees, those kinds of things, then they'll get better in the winter. But there are animals who have allergies to things like dust mites, wool. So, you know, think the carpet or their dog beds. There's all kinds of things in the environment that can still aggravate allergies through the winter. When we see a animal with allergies in the winter, we tend to look more for food allergies first, just because, you know, allergies to dust mites and wool are less common. But
okay. Is there anything else you want to tell us about winterizing your animals or your pets, and or summarize what you've been talking about today?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it is just really common sense. And I guess, you know, the only other thing I would add, in addition to being cognizant of the air temperature and your pet or horse's overall condition and ability to adjust and tolerate that, is that we do see a lot of animals gain weight.
We do have a call. Let's take the call. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. My dog exhibited a about a dime size, very bright red, like fire engine red or blood red spot on its stomach a few days ago. And then the next day, it was a round circle, like a ring, with a spot in the middle of it. And then the next day, that whole ring and that spot had sort of shifted position. Does this ring any bells for Louise?
I'll ask you a couple questions about it. So was the spot itchy?
Just a warning, we've got about a minute and a half.
Okay. Was the spot itchy?
No, not at all. And it was the kind of thing, not raised at all.
And did the hair fall out?
It was on a hairless part of her body, so no.
Okay. The first thing that comes to mind with that description would be a reaction to an insect bite, a spider or something like that.
Ah, okay.
So,
and not, so probably not to worry if it kind of has resolved. It's not a sign of worse things to come or something like that.
Right. I would say if it's on the mend, then you're probably in good shape.
Okay.
Thank you, caller. Where were we?
Just finishing up. I was just going to encourage people that even though it gets harder to keep their pets exercised when it's cold and dark, when they get home from work, that's important. It'll make you feel good to get out there in the brisk air, and it's good to keep your pets from gaining too much weight over the winter.
Well, they'll feel better probably too.
Yeah.
Mentally better. That's true. I think we've about half a minute, maybe. Is there anything else you want to... Well, really quickly, Louise, thank you so much. But maybe
I'm not such a fast talker, so I guess we'll just thank everyone for listening and tune in next month.
Yes, see you again third Thursday of the month, 4:30, Ask the Vet. Thank you very much, everyone.